This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you listen to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. This is the best bits from Monday, May the 24th. Coming up a little later on, we talk loyalty programs. Bit of a theme running throughout the show this morning as we looked into the proliferation and prevalence of loyalty programs. Is it just me or everywhere you go, are you asked to download an app to get a better deal or take advantage of better rates? This was a question that certainly we discussed in studio, but we also put to Mano Fernandez of Quick Brown Fox Consulting. We also talked golf here in the studio. Why? Because it was the morning after, the night before, when a little bit of history was made. Phil Mickelson, a big lefty, scored a memorable victory over in one of the latest majors over in the United States, winning the PGA, as the oldest ever winner of a Masters event. He's 50 years old now, still swinging with the best of them out there on the course and on tour, which sort of prompted all of us, but well, really Richard, to ask the question, is 50 the new 30? How do you embrace the second 50 years of your century once you have passed 50, be that in a sporting context or more specifically from a business and corporate perspective? A question that we put to Dr. Thuraya. Plus, we looked at the selling of Charlie Bit My Finger. Yeah, we've all seen the video. Doesn't need much introduction, does it? That's just sold for an NFT for it. Huge amount of money, making the family yet more money as well. We asked about the influence that the video itself had, one of the first videos to make a name for itself on YouTube, but also the fact that it can still garner such a huge amount of non-fungible token wealth for the creators and the family. There was aviation on the show as well. We spoke with Vinara Longani, who has been back with us to discuss the imminent numbers coming through from Emirates. We're going to have to wait a day or two to actually get those, but nothing wrong with trying to look ahead to see what one could expect. Plus, we had Serena Kelly join us live in studio to answer some of your questions, but also to address some of the big news stories of the day.
Ask Serena.
Kelly in studio with us.
Morning, guys.
All well? Cases and vaccines. Give me some numbers.
Okay, so after this time last week, after more than 103,900 tests were conducted, they announced 1,251 new cases. Yesterday, after more than 236,900 tests, they announced 1,591 new cases. You also had 1,569 recoveries, 3 fatalities, and your active cases slightly up to 18,406.
That's cases. Vaccine?
More than 12.1 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine have been administered across the country so far. 12,104,525 to be exact. Distribution rate of 122.39 doses per 100 people. And according to Seha, they've taken to Twitter to say that the UAE is currently number one worldwide when it comes to vaccine distribution per 100 people. But when your 24-hour period of vaccine distribution, Friday, you're looking at more than 90,200 doses administered. Saturday, more than 70,100 doses. And if you look at the weekend prior to that, it was very low. You're looking at more than 2,600 on Friday, more than 2,400 on Saturday. But we did explain that this change would be down to the fact that now all facilities, Seha, they're offering all vaccines. When it comes to Seha, they recently announced that Pfizer is available across all their facilities.
Next up, let's do visitors. First sign of inoculations?
So it's, yes, for visitors in the UAE. It's the UAE and China, they are together launching a regional vaccination site in Dubai. So it's an agreement that's been made between the UAE's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation and the Chinese Embassy in the Emirates. UAE government, of course, we are fully aware, are currently inoculating citizens and residents in their national vaccination campaign. So this new program is called Spring Sprout Action. It's going to allow Chinese nationals who are here visiting short-term visa without UAE residency to receive the Sinopharm vaccine in Dubai. Be organised and administered by the Dubai Health Authority. Chinese nationals aged 16 and above will be eligible. And if you're visiting in the UAE, Chinese nationals are being advised, visit the official website for the Chinese embassy in the UAE or the consulate general in Dubai for more details there.
Lots of questions coming through this morning. One person, no name with this one, asking, Serena, any more information on the third dose of Sinopharm?
With the booster shot, I think the one thing that was specified during the announcement when it came out during the presser of last week was that you need to wait 6 months after your second jab. And time-wise, I think Richard already raised this point when we were discussing it then, most people will not have hit that mark yet. So it's one of those, just, you know, relax, 6 months, then you can look into getting that booster shot. But not everybody's going to need to get it.
Yeah.
It is optional, and they're mainly targeting the high-risk categories, such as elderly, those with chronic conditions. But again, it is something, it's optional. It's something that you can look at when you hit the six-month mark. Maybe, you know, speak to your doctor and get advice on that. But of course, if you would like the booster, then more details will be coming out, because it would make sense that how you make an appointment for a vaccine currently through the different platforms, it would make sense that the same thing would be done with the booster jab as well.
Let's now have a look at some of the other questions coming through. Bob wants to know, he says, Serena, would you mind hastening a guess as to when the UK will come off the red list and will it go straight to the green list?
Should we wait till June 21st to see what happens? No. But, you know...
Who's going to win the 320 at Kempton?
Wow. Amazing day, actually.
I'm tired by now.
Very good odds.
There's no information that's been filtering through with regards to the updating of their list. Obviously, that's something that is forever changing. I know that when the announcements first came out, they were saying they'd be reviewing it every 3 weeks. So we still have, you know, it's only been a recent thing. And... but yeah, fingers crossed, hopefully we will get to that stage. I think obviously the concern was because the UAE is a hub when it comes to travelling, but there have been amendments with regards to that, with certain flights being suspended as well. So let's see what happens.
One more and then we will say adieu. Serena, I've had both doses of Sinopharm here in Dubai. Where can we go to test the efficacy levels to ensure we are still vaccinated at approved levels? I ask as we are hoping to travel in the summer break, from Natalia.
So if you're looking for, I think you're looking for an antibodies test, I'd speak to your doctor. I do believe, Tom, you may have also found out there was maybe a
Canadian
location
hospital
in Dubai.
Yeah.
I believe there's a location in Sharjah as well. I think various facilities in Abu Dhabi. But I would speak to your doctor, because regardless, I think we have to remember the point of the vaccine is that it's giving the information to your cells to be able, it's like, you know, muscle memory, being able to remember what it needs to do when the virus hits your body. So creating those antibodies. So the fact that your cells have that information, thanks to the vaccine, that's the main objective. So, but I understand your concerns with, you know, how long the antibodies stay in your system, but not to worry, it will still know what to do.
SK, really appreciate it. Thank you, as always. Thanks for your updates. Listen, if people want updates throughout the rest of the day, obviously the RN News Centre will be developing all of those. But if people want more from you in the meantime, what's the best way for
you
them to do that?
You can check all our socials. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, also the RN News Centre website and app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Emirates 2020 results, the full year results, are expected out this week. They are imminent. Maybe we could even see them today. What could the numbers look like? We are joined now by Vanamra Longani, Head of Operations at Sarin & Co. Vanamra, it's lovely to see you. How are you doing?
I am very well, and thank you for having me on the show. How are you?
I'm good. Let's have a bit of wild speculation. What could we see from Emirates when they come out with their full year results? Let's start with passenger traffic and passenger revenue. What would you expect that to look like?
Well, just to throw a couple of numbers there, you know, last November when they declared their results, the airline, the Emirates Group per se lost $3.8 billion, and the vast majority of it, which is $3.4 billion, was attributed to the Emirates airline. Now, since then, things did get slightly better over the winter period because the UK, there was, for example, an air bridge established between the UAE, Dubai, and the UK. So a lot of people, there was a lot of traffic backwards and forwards there. Similarly, with other large markets like India, for example, which accounts for one third probably of the capacity, there was a lot of origin and destination traffic, even though the Indian government restrained the UAE airlines from carrying Sixth Freedom traffic. So, you know, things were looking better. And now, as we speak, things aren't. So, so it would be safe to assume that Emirates will be reporting a very marginal increase, if at all, in numbers. And also, they would be reporting another significant loss.
Is the question just how big that loss is at this point for Namra?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'll, to give credit to the airline and just not just Emirates, the airline industry at large, airlines have had to reinvent their business model overnight. A lot of them now rely on cargo as their primary source of income. And Emirates has done that, too. A large part of their 777 fleet now have been converted into passenger freighters where seats have been taken out in the cabin. They continue to also predominantly now rely on cargo, be it in the cabin or in the belly. So, so yes, that would have made up for some sort of revenue shortfall, but nothing substantial. So, yes, you are correct. It's only a matter of how big that loss is.
Yeah, speaking to people in the industry, they reckon that the airlines here have flipped their passenger cargo ratios from 70-30 to 30-70. How much can cargo keep an airline afloat, afly?
Well, I'll be honest with you. It actually, in all honesty, depends on what the cargo yields are like. So when the pandemic started, a lot some airlines were quick starters and switched to carrying cargo earlier than others. But at this point in time, everyone seems to be doing it. So, you know, passenger planes converted into freighters and carrying cargo instead of seats is now something that almost every airline does. So it's gotten very competitive over a period of time. So as much as cargo can bring in some amount of revenue, in all honesty, I would be surprised if it even helps meet the operating cost of that particular flight.
Let's talk about costs, actually, because you mentioned the half-year results that we got in the middle of November from Emirates, and there had been a number of cost reductions that the airline had been able to make by grounding aircraft, but also by letting go of staff. Mm-hmm. Where are we, or where could we be with that with Emirates?
Well, again, it's a tricky one, you know, because it honestly depends on how the virus behaves. I mean, I have friends who were let go, unfortunately, at Emirates and were pilots on the A380. And there was word that Emirates might call them back shortly. And here we are again. The UK has put the UAE on the red list. India is closed. Because of the fact that we have this massive second wave going on. So every time there is hope that things might start to look better, the virus seems to think otherwise.
Is Emirates likely to need another cash infusion from the government?
Most likely. I mean, I would even go on to say definitely. They would definitely need a cash infusion from the UAE government.
Let's look at the bigger picture of where we are at the moment with aviation. When we were speaking to people January, even February, there was quite a lot of optimism for the aviation industry about a second half bounce back, a vaccination bounce, if you like. Fast forward just a couple of months, and obviously the world is looking like a very different place with some of those major markets you mentioned, like India being hit by a devastating new wave. What's your feeling about the second half of this year for the industry, Vinamra?
Well, again, like I said, you know, there will be some sort of a recovery for markets where non-stop flights would be preferred over connecting flights. Now, the issue really with the airlines in the Middle East is these are mega airlines that connect passengers from east to west and vice versa. So, you know, unless and until all the spokes of this mega hub that Emirates, for example, has set up in Dubai are open to receiving passengers, or where they can pick up passengers from. A sizable recovery is just not in sight. And just to reiterate, like I said, you know, the UK is closed off, a major market. Australia still remains predominantly closed. And unfortunately, that's the case with India, too, at this point in time. So, I am an optimist, but I'm not really sure if one can paint a rosy picture for the rest of this year at this point in time, given the circumstances.
How much more can airlines in general downsize and still stay airlines?
Well, I guess downsizing can be done in many ways. So, I mean, for example, again, with Emirates, they're now looking at the future of this model. And for an example, they want to downsize their aircraft orders with Boeing from larger 777X aircraft to smaller Dreamliner aircraft. So, you know, there's obviously the immediate downsizing, which has already been done by airlines, both in the region and everywhere else in the world, where you let people go in ground aircraft. But after a point in time, to be relevant in a market, you've got to operate a certain number of flights to a certain number of destinations. And I think, in all honesty, the airlines in the Gulf have reached that point where you can't really downsize anymore.
There was quite a bullish report out from Bank of America, their sort of monthly analysis of the oil market, in which they think that fundamentals look stronger. They're talking about improving mobility. They're talking about people moving and flying around an awful lot more. What's your outlook for the oil price and the amount of fuel that the industry will need if, as you say, there are still significant headwinds?
Well, I guess there will be small patches. Well, if you were to look at the U.S. domestic market now, I mean, by July, they say they would be back to pre-COVID capacity. So, yes, demand for oil will go up in patches. India, before the second wave hit us, we were almost back to 80% of our pre-COVID domestic capacity. So, and as we all know, as demand for oil rises, so do prices. So it's like a double-edged sword, really, for the airlines. You're able to fill those seats up, but your costs go up simultaneously.
Vinay Rangani is head of operations at Sarin & Co. He's an aviation expert speaking to us this morning about what we could see in those reports, that full year numbers that we are expecting out any moment now from Emirates. We had the half year reports around the 13th, 14th of November from memory, but we're looking forward to seeing what their full year numbers look like. No one is expecting anything absolutely brilliant, because we know the situation that aviation has faced in general. As Vinamra says, likely that there will be a loss. The question is, how significant will it be?
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's talk about golf, which is a little bit more tangible, and that is because around about 6 hours ago, this happened.
Biggest moment of a legendary career. Phil defeats Father Time.
That is Phil Mickelson winning a golf major championship, the PGA, one of the four major championships. Nothing unusual there in some senses. He's won several of them before. In fact, he won it 30 years ago, that same championship. He is one of the world's greatest golfers. What's interesting is that he is 50 years old. And a lot of people are talking about, well, if he can do that at the age of 50, be an elite athlete, defeat the world's fittest and fastest and strongest golfers, what does that mean for the rest of us 50-year-olds? Look, I'm 49, I'm 50 next year, I'm not quite there yet. But it is an interesting thought experiment. So we've been speaking to Dr. Thuraya Kanafani, who's a clinical director and clinical psychologist, also a co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic here in the UAE. We're asking this question for Business Breakfast listeners. Professionals in the UAE who are in their 40s, heading towards 50, or perhaps even beyond that, what lessons can we take from Big Phil's victory in the golf last night?
I think one of the most important things to do for an individual to keep their life going at the age of 50 is definitely to not look at the number as something that's quite morbid. A lot of people fear getting older, and rightfully so, because now as we get older, we look more towards our mortality, and we definitely feel the differences in our body. But I think it's important to remind yourself that when you have that mindset that, you know, life is still have so many more years left and it's never too late. So when you change that mindset and you have more of kind of like an infinite mindset, you'll definitely be able to look at your life in a much different way and not think that, oh, because I'm 50 X or because I'm 40 Y. So one of the most important things I would suggest for individuals to do is change your mindset about the number. Don't think of the number. Just think of life as an infinite possibility where you can really have so many different things that you can do for yourself, especially things that make you feel a lot more whole and a lot more like the person that you truly want to be.
Dr. Thuraya Kanafani from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic here in Dubai. Thank you for those inspiring words. I am, what, 9.5 months away from my 50th birthday.
What about us that don't want life to begin at 50? What about us that just want to be sitting on a terrace drinking sort of posh Ribena and enjoying life after 50?
You make a good point, though, because it's the same with the cult of entrepreneurship, where you're kind of made to feel that you need to, you know, sort of break out and do it for yourself, and entrepreneurs are held up. And what about those who just quite like having jobs and paychecks?
Nothing wrong with that at all. Yeah, so if you're in a position to retire at 50, Tom, I applaud you. I have crunched the numbers and it's not looking likely for me. So I'm 30th of March next year, I turn 50.
Right. Oh, what are we doing?
It's going to be a good 9 months.
It's the last day of Expo. So I'm going to have an Expo party. They don't know.
I'll arrange
yet.
Some fireworks for you, Rich.
Thank you very much.
I reckon I could probably pull that off.
It's going to be an absolute belter. It might even be the Dubai World Cup that day as well. So it's going
to. I'll buy your horse.
We were talking about that earlier, weren't we? Off air, of course. So it's going to be a belter. But my guess is, as things stand, 31st of March. Well, I'm not turning up for work 31st of March. If you forget that, but the 1st of April, I will be back putting a shift in. Not because I like either of you, because I want to, but because I will still be working and to put bread on the table, pay the mortgage, school fees, and all that kind of stuff.
Maybe one way to retire is to put a video onto YouTube. We've been talking about Charlie Bit My Finger. That went for an NFT yesterday, sold for $760-something and $999 to a private investor. I've just been doing a little research into it. I mean, they're certainly not retiring on that. It was reported that the family made £100,000 sterling in advertising revenue from the video itself, which is not, you know, it's better than a kick in the teeth. But I've been looking, do you know, the most popular video on YouTube of all time? We were talking about 837 million views for Charlie Bit My Finger. Most popular video on YouTube of all time?
Oh, Despacito.
Is number two. Number one is Baby Shark Dance. Not playing that, that's for sure.
No.
8.61 billion. Despacito is number two. Louis Fonsi, never heard of him before, Despacito. He's made $2.7 million from YouTube alone.
Just because whenever my kids play it, there's an advert for Lucozade or something, and he gets a tenth of a tenth of a tenth of a cent for each one of those. And it adds up.
2.7 million from those YouTube plays alone. It's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
Tire on that.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
So we are talking loyalty this morning on the Business Breakfast, and that's because as a team, we've got a special report today, and we have noticed a proliferation of in-house loyalty programs, typically app-based, whether it's a golf course or a garden centre. Everyone seems to have their own loyalty app. Now, it used to be that these loyalty programs were kind of generic. You would earn things like air miles. They were outsourced, but now they seem to be coming in-house. Joining us on the line now to give us some perspective on this is the co-founder of Quick Brown Fox Consulting, Manna Fernandez. Morning, Manna. Thanks for being with us.
Morning, Richard. Thanks for having me.
So, first question is this. We, Tom, Brandy, myself, have noticed a proliferation of these in-house apps for restaurants and other outlets. Is it really happening, or are we missing a trick here?
No, it is definitely happening. There's, I think the market is getting more and more aware of the need to get to know their customers a little better. And what better way to do it than through a loyalty program?
Well, do you say that, but there are just too many of them, are there not? And this was the issue. You know, whatever your favorite three or four restaurants are, your favorite three or four retail stores, or whatever it may be,
we've only got so many apps that we can keep on our phone. I'm not sure that we can really manage, as consumers, we can really manage all of these different apps. I quite liked it when we had just one or two generic apps, whether it was a loyalty program like Air Miles, and wherever you went, you earned Air Miles, or something like, you know, The Entertainer that would get you a bit of a discount with a 2-for-1 voucher or whatever it may be. I can't have 38 different apps on my phone, Manav. So what's going to happen here?
I think, look, it's a sign of the market maturing and is a definitely a need for businesses to get to know their customers better and better. Look, coalition programs like Air Miles have their place. But again, you know, it's something that in a mature market, it'll take some time for things to settle down. What's really important to understand here is the way these programs are being structured. In order to get to know a little more about Richard, I need to have some sort of formula or some sort of program to get to know him. And this is what a loyalty program really helps you do. Obviously, it also helps bring you back. You know, there's a bunch of ways through, whether it's recognition or points, et cetera, that we'll give you to bring you back. But the reality is this is basically a value exchange. I need to get to know you better as a customer. And this is why I'm giving you a program. Now, I appreciate that you can't have all those apps. And the only reason you'll do it is because you are already going back to a place over and over again. So, you know, it is a good sign, but I think there's going to be, you know, some of these are going to work, some of these are not going to work. And over time, you'll find that this will settle down a little bit as well.
Okay, so we're talking a little bit later on to one operator of an in-house app program. Tom, you're going to be speaking to the guys from the Via or Via app. We don't even know how to pronounce it. But it's based in Dubai, isn't it? You got asked for it when you were playing some golf a couple of days ago. We think is it Al Wasl Asset Management, which is a kind of Dubai government-related entity which owns a few golf clubs and other things. You're going to speak to them a little bit later on, and that's really what's kicked this off, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, that was you know, out and about, but then equally I've had it at petrol stations, at supermarkets. It just seems that everywhere you go these days, you've got to have an app, if you like, in order to make that purchase.
So, Manav, here's a question. If it's a bare-knuckle fight, and in the blue corner, we've got in-house apps, every restaurant group, every petrol station chain, every leisure facility owner has their own in-house app. And in the red corner, we've got generic apps, like, and we're using the term Air Miles, but it could be others, or The Entertainer or something like that, an outsourced third-party app. Who's going to win if it's a straight fight between the two?
I would do in-house apps any day. And I'll tell you why. Because, look, the way we see it, you're going to, say, a petrol pump that's on your way to work or on your way home. You're not going to necessarily go far away from that just for an app. You'll continue to go there. And look, at Quick Brown Fox, one of the things we are firm believers in is that the app or the program is not going to do anything unless you already have a superlative product where people understand what your brand is all about and you're already providing an amazing experience. Then this app or this program helps you get to know me better and helps make sure that we build a relationship. So, you know, that can't necessarily be done through a coalition program. The generic programs you just mentioned don't necessarily do that. They're busy juggling all the relationships between the different merchants that are on the program and so on and so forth. Too much, in fact, to be actually managing my data and to remember to wish me, for example, on my birthday or give me a few extra points or, you know, offer me a free coffee when I go down to that petrol pump and I'm getting petrol on my birthday. So I'm just giving you sort of, you know, exaggerated examples. But that is really what a program is about. And that is why I believe an in-house program will survive over the generic ones.
Well, I take your point, but we've only got a couple of minutes left. Mark has written in saying, I tried signing up for an app for a real estate company. He lives in one of their developments. He says, they want your whole life details, including your shoe size. I gave up and I can't be bothered. It's just not worth 10% off. This is the challenge, is it not, that brands face? Yes, if you're the scale of Emirates or Etihad, or maybe even a massive retail group like an Altair or an Alshire, you might bother to sign up. But very few companies have that scale, Manav.
No, you know what? So what you just mentioned with Mark is basically a user experience issue. So we're all familiar with LinkedIn. LinkedIn has a great profiling method. They call it progressive profiling. Get my data, ask for it over a period of time. But for sign up, just take my phone number. It's the, you know, a great unique identifier. My phone number, my name, maybe an email address. That's all you need to sign me up. Then over a period of time, you start asking me more and more information, ask me, you know, every week, every month, every, you know, ever so often you ask me for more information. So that's a user experience issue. And I agree with Mark. I wouldn't sign up if they asked me for all that information in one go.
Okay, fine. So, finally, Manav, before we let you go, we're mainly talking about B2C, business to consumer here, an airline, a restaurant, a retail company, a golf club, whatever it may be. Can it work in B2B, for example? Could, I mean, I'm thinking of my own company. I work for the Arabian Radio Network, Virgin Radio, City 1016 and Dubai Eye. Does it work for business-to-business sales? Could a company have a loyalty app incentivizing you to buy adverts from us rather than a newspaper or something like that, or you as a consultancy buy from Quick Brown Fox rather than XYZ, other consultancy? Does it work in B2B?
It does. It absolutely does. And again, it's about size and scale. We manage our relationships on an Excel sheet. I make sure that we have our birthdays of our clients, you know, all of that. And we gather that information over time through secretaries, through PAs, etc. Now, at a larger scale, let's talk about a large electronics distributor. Let's say, and they've got multiple outlets across, and they have resellers or reseller relationships. Yeah, absolutely. They can again look at who they're incentivizing, who the decision makers are, and how to go about it. Now, whether it's somebody who owns that business, the reseller business owner, or someone who's on the floor making a decision about, you know, pushing one brand over the other, there's ways of incentivizing people across the board.
Manav, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. Appreciate your time this morning. That's Manav Fernandez, Quick Brown Fox Consulting. And thanks very much indeed for getting up early, putting on a shirt and tie and a waistcoat. Manav was one of the last guests we ever had in the studio before lockdown, wasn't he? I think he was the last guy in the building.
Do you know what? He probably was. Are we able to say what he was notable for?
His bulging biceps. That man works out.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.